Hello and welcome to Connecting with the Stars, here with me, Mary Edwards and Jocelyn Buckner. Great to see you today. And good
nice
to
be
here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure. We'll do a quick bio and then we can hear some of Jocelyn's amazing story. She's had a fascinating background doing many different things, and we'll tap on a lot of that today. So Jocelyn Buckner is a lifelong UFO experiencer. Before retiring, she was a paranormal UFO tour guide, UFO researcher, intuitive, and quantum healer. She is a writer, artist, photographer, and longtime Sedona resident. And she has really been in the weave of all the layers of Sedona for the last 22 years. And also, it's been fascinating hearing about her property that she bought. So why don't you start out with that, and then we can talk about some of your own experiences and just go enjoy the day talking about this time together, talking about your amazing background and what you've done.
Okay. Oh, great. I live on an original Disney property. He purchased this property years ago because he was going to do a movie about a disclosure. Actually, President Eisenhower approached him and said that he wanted to disclose to the American public what the government knew about UFOs. And they were going to have Marilyn Monroe and Mickey Mouse as the ambassador to the stars. And so Disney said, yeah, I'm very interested. And Disney said, well, here, take this film that is from our Department of Energy. And it was original, a kind of film that they use that you have to run it and take a photo of it running to make copies. So this was the original film that somebody in the military had filmed right here, probably a stone's throw from where I'm sitting.
Excuse me, what year about would there, decade would this have been?
Because it was 1949, that original film was filmed. And, the government came here because there was a lot of films being made in Sedona at that time that were Westerns, and, you know, John Wayne and all those guys. And there was one time that John Wayne and Maureen O'Hare were in a film, in a scene, and they were filming it, and you could see the camera was on them, and then the camera panned up and it was watching a UFO. And meanwhile, down, they kept on acting. And for a long time, that little clip was at the museum, the movie museum that's in Uptown here, but it disappeared sometime in the early 80s. Nobody knows whatever happened to it. It just, gone. I fortunately did have a chance to see that before I moved to Sedona. I was here just visiting and went into the movie museum, and they were sort of featuring it. And so anyway, the government came here. They purchased a property that is nearby, is now Forest Service land, and it's right near Red Rock Loop Road and Red Rock State Park. And but it's off a little bit on the other side of Turkey Creek. And this is actually the portal area that is mentioned in the Rendlesham case in 1980 by Jim Burroughs John Burroughs and Jim Peniston, who actually saw a UFO come down, and Jim went over, put his hands on it. He was downloaded with ones and zeros. Those ones and zeros were later, they were later put out and deciphered by Claude Swanson and Dr. Claude Swanson and this other guy, I can't remember his name. But they got several messages out of that. And one of the messages was the seven places on the planet where there were portals where UFOs were coming in. And that one portal is out my door and to the south a little bit. So I see a lot of UFOs, and people come here all the time looking for UFOs. But the government came here, they made the film, they gave the film to Disney. Disney came out and purchased it. This was part of the Chavez Ranch property and the Sherman property. It's kind of, you know, dissected there. And he bought a big swath of land out here. And his cover was that he was doing nature photos for the Wonderful World of Disney, or filming Spin and Marty or the Mickey Mouse Club. And he used this property out here. Disney built his house in West Sedona near Thunder Mountain, pretty much where the stupa is now. And they actually had a little Western town that they built, you know, just that were the fronts for movies that they did out there. And it was, you know, a tourist attraction at that time. But he would come down here to watch the UFOs and work on that project. But he told, Disney told Eisenhower, well, you know, I'm working on doing a park, opening a park. I've got, you know, Fantasia I'm working on, and Snow White, these movies. And as soon as I get that done, I'm going to start working on the disclosure program. And all of this was told to me by a neighbor who was a little old lady when I moved in here 22 years ago, and she has since passed away. But she was a makeup artist and hairstylist, costume person for several different movie companies that came out here. And she had built the house that is right at the end of my street. And, you know, I used to see her all the time when I was out there, a very flamboyant woman with bright red hair. And she always wore leopard skin clothes. And she was just, you know, really great. And there's one time she invited me into her house and she goes, I want to tell you about how Disney, and there's a street in the neighborhood that is named Disney Lane. She goes, I want to tell you about how that street got its name and you know, the history of your property here. And so I sat on her couch and scribbling on just about anything that, you know, old envelopes and junk mail and a piece of paper towel at the very end of it, so I wouldn't forget the things that she was telling me. And so this is how I got the story of Disney being involved in the disclosure project. But, you know, Eisenhower left office and JFK came in. He picked up the project. He wanted to go with it. And then we know what happened to JFK, and that was the end of the project. And then later, sometime in the late 70s, the government went back to Disney and said, yeah, about that film that we gave you, we want it back. And Disney said, no, I haven't. And they said, oh, and by the way, we want all the film that you took. And he goes, oh, no, that's mine. And they went back and forth for a few years. And some, I want to say sometime in 1978 or 79, the little cabin that he built in the area for his filming burned to the ground. And this little cabin they used for the people that work for Disney, you know, camera people and stuff. They actually lived there, sort of like a little bunkhouse, and it burned to the ground. And after it burned to the ground, Disney was notified and said, yeah, we know where you live. Give us that film back. And Disney suffered a heart attack, and the first of many, and eventually he gave up the film. So, you know, and the project was ended, and you know, he had to sign away all rights to the film that he had taken, in case that there were any copies. But anyway, this area is just really lousy with UFOs and weird things that happen. And when I have the guest house, I'm in my guest house right now, and I invited my friend Melinda Leslie to come out. She had an idea to do tours with night vision goggles to spy on the UFOs, and I said, it's really great. Person that was doing it here, one guy, Tom Dongo, who's retiring, and then the lady that was that kind of picked up had the old UFO shop, and she was very sick with brain cancer, and so she was closing her shop. And I said, you know, you're just in the perfect time. And at the time, I was working at Center for the New Age, so I introduced Melinda to the owner there so that she could, you know, set up her business. But while she was here, and this was in November, first part of November, and, you know, the leaves were still on the ground, and I invited her to spend the night in the guest house, or, you know, or she ended up staying like a week. And her and her friend Bonnie, who was a very heavy smoker, were staying here. And so one night things got very weird. I woke up and I saw a couple of ETs walking through the wall and, you know, coming right up to my bed and saying, you know, okay, well, it's time to go. And usually I have a dog that just anything that moves in the night, she would just, oh. And I looked down and, you know, where she was sleeping, and she was absolutely paralyzed. I could see her one eye, that, you know, she's laying on her side. I could see her one eye moving around. She couldn't move. And I told the ETs, well, you know, it's cold outside. I want to put on some sweats. So they allowed me to put on some sweats. And of course, it was laundry day. I couldn't find any. And, you know, I had to dig around and quickly put on these sweats. And I had put them on backwards because it was in the night and I was hurrying. But I went out my door, got a bedroom door that goes outside. And as soon as I went out there, I saw an egg-shaped craft that was like a single person, egg-shaped craft. And apparently I'd known all about this because I knew how to get in it. And then it would just go up, and it followed Red Rock Loop Road, the upper Red Rock Loop Road, to the high school. And, you know, I got out of it, and I saw Melinda, I saw Bonnie, and I recognized them because I could hear Bonnie's hacking cough. And then I saw Melinda, and then I saw my family was there also, my husband. So there was this bus there, and it kind of looked like a short bus, and it was kind of a light color. And went to go get on the bus, and it was, you know, from the outside looked very short, but on the inside it looked huge. I mean, I'm not even sure if I saw the end of it, but there were lots of people there, you know. 100 or so people, and they were all various states of conking out, and it was seemed like it was only me and Melinda that were very conscious. And it was, you know, we sat out front, and Melinda was just mad as heck, and she was going to call her friend Les Valdez. She pulls out her cell phone out of the pocket of her jacket, and she's beeping along, I'm going to call him. And she's just so mad. And she goes, they're okay if they take me, but they're not going to take my friends, kind of thing. And this ET just sort of floated over and plucked the cell phone from her hands. And she said that she later found it in the guest house. It was under a pillow or something. But it was pretty funny. And then while we're waiting, they kept on flashing these symbols at us, and we took this road out, a very familiar road that you take to go to Bradshaw Ranch, and Road 525. And then they veered off onto a dirt road, and it looked like we were going straight for a Red Rock Mountain. And all of a sudden, the mountain opened up. It just, you know, the rocks just dissipated, and it just opened up. It just parted. And the bus rolled in there, and we got off. And at this point, I think we were separated into groups of some sort, and we were taken to a mothership that was over Flagstaff. And as soon as we got up to that mothership, we came in, there was this catwalk, and we could look down and see these silver beds with people in various states of undress being, you know, examined by these ETs. But lots of hybrids on the craft, and they were sort of our tour guides, our stewardesses, or stewards, as you would say. And they took us to another part of the room. Now, at this point, you know, Melinda and I were both regressed by Yvonne Smith, and about this happening. So, you know, we're telling Yvonne the same story, but it, to me, it seemed like we were in, you know, we might have been taken back to the underground base, because it seemed very government green building with tile floors and kind of, you know, the lights, fluorescent lights that kind of flickered and stuff. Yeah.
Outdated. Dry out.
And and we went into this room, and we were sat at these chairs that were like, you know, in a college, they have these chairs that have a desk that flips over. Yeah, a little. And so we're sitting in the back, and the wall kind of opens up, and you see this chair there with, you know, some sort of apparatus on it, and a lot of, you know, maybe 5-6 ETs scurrying about, different kinds. Most of them were grays, but there were, I did notice a kind of a insectoid kind of being.
Like a praying mantis?
Praying mantis. Yeah. Uh-huh. But the ones that we were interacting with were like tall whites, 4 feet,
and they were 8 feet or something like that, and blue skinned.
They were very thin, translucent skin, long blonde hair, very beautiful. I want to say that they were about 7 feet tall. They, you know, they could have passed for humans, and but they had to sit down in this chair, they called me first, and I could hear Melinda and Bonnie in the back, Bonnie again with the cough. I knew that they were there. And Melinda's voice is just a booming voice, and it carries. So I was called up, and I sat down, and there was a table, and it had like this ring on, you know, an open ring, and on one side of the table was this thing that was pyramid shape, or a kind of a rounded pyramid shape, like a fat teardrop. And then on the other side, there were like a grid that, and all of this looked like it was made of some sort of a golden type metal, or maybe brass. And they put this thing on her head, and, you know, kind of a skull cap with electrodes that were attached. And they said, okay, well, what we want you to do is, not using your hands, or, you know, without touching, we want you to pick up that little teardrop thing, or that little pyramid thing, and move it through the hoop and make it go to the other side. And they did some sort of mind meld thing, and they to teach us how to do it. And so, you know, that because at first I thought telekinesis, yeah, sure. But you know, at one point, they, while you were doing, it's kind of like riding a bike, you know, how your mom would run along the side of the bike when you were first learning, and hold you up, and then they would let go, and you're riding along, you're going, wow, I'm doing it. Same kind of thing. They helped us pick it up, and then at some point, after two or three times of doing this, they told us where to put it down on the grid on the other side. And after two or three times, I got it. You know, I rode the bike. I could move it, you know, back and forth. And so they took me out, and I went, and I was talking to somebody, and they were asking, like, you know, kind of, you know, what is your name, what is your date of birth, you know, what's your blood type, kind of, you know, really clinical kind of thing doing. And while I'm outside the room, I could hear Bonnie's voice that said, you know, she's kind of coughing away, saying, you're kidding me. You want me to do what? I haven't slept in 3 days, and you want me to move that thing with my mind. So they took her out, and they took her down a different corridor than I, you know, I didn't even realize was there. And then I went back and sat in the back of the room, and they brought Melinda up. And of course, Melinda was hanging it back and forth, you know, perfectly. And Melinda looked around to me, and she saw me in the back of the room, and I gave her the thumbs up. She gave me the thumbs up. And then we were taken out and put along a bench area. And at that point, my backwards clothes were really bothering me. Now, on the bus over, I was able to, you know, pull my sleeves in and get my shirt turned around, but my pants were really bothering, and I had that big bulge, you know, right in my crotch, and I really wanted to go and move it. So this one hybrid woman with bright red hair came by, and I said, excuse me, do you have a restroom I could use, like, you know, so I could, you know, and I was just thinking, I'll just turn my pants around in the restroom. And she said, sure, you have to follow me, but I'm doing my rounds. So, I have to make a couple of stops. And as we're walking through this area, one of the areas that she went to was, it was like a zoo, and there were different pods and, with barricades around them. And I remember she told me, okay, well, just stop here. And it was right in front of this exhibit, I say, something that had a very low fence around it. And inside, it kind of looked like something that reminded me of coral, but it had the frequency of a dog. It was it seemed conscious and it seemed friendly. I could see it wagging back and forth, when I would get up close, and I went back up, and I could even hear it kind of squeaking. And then walked by some others, following her, and there were different kinds. I want to say that this must have been some sort of plant life that had some sort of consciousness to it.
So it was
And
an
there was different
experimental, it was a laboratory that was
plants.
walking by, sort of, that you were
I
seeing
don't know
experiments
if
of
it was
animals
experimental or if
or
it were just samples
samples. Okay.
of that they had collected. And it's, because it seemed like this hybrid woman was checking on them or feeding them or something. She would several of them, she would turn a light on, or she walked up, a light would come on, and you could see what was under. Some of them were underwater or under some sort of thick gel, is substance. But anyway, I get to the restroom, and it's like, the restroom that you had in high school, and with the
Right at
that green and
creamy,
that tile and those
faded,
fluorescent lights, and the thing that you press your foot on the pedal and the water came out of the middle of it, like a canister, and the paper towel dispenser, all just like that. But I was able to fix my pants and relieve myself and walk back out. And then there was a guy that was just outside, and he was wearing some sort of uniform that looked like a military uniform. And now I couldn't tell, what military. There was no flags, there was no name on it or anything like that, but it was obviously a military uniform with the epaulets and the gold buttons with some sort of little embossed
So
thing on it. And
he was human.
he was human.
Did he talk
But
to you at all?
again,
Did he talk to you about
he
anything?
said, he goes, yeah, he goes, yes, I need you to follow me. And from there, they took me to a debriefing room where I sat across a table. And I remember that this was absolutely military, because there was a name tag on the table that said Captain So and So. And I couldn't remember what the name was, even in regression. But I remember Captain, so I know that he was somebody that was in charge, and he was debriefing me. And it's like, what did you feel? Were did you feel the electrodes, or did you feel the ET energies? And basic questions like that you would expect. And but my questions went unanswered, like, well, yeah, who was that? And what was that for? And
Were they putting
what are you going to
information
do
in
with this information?
dump, right? Because I remember that at 10 when I had some of those. It was just those weird things on your head, and you know, and it was like, what are you doing? Like,
right. And I remember that from
they told me my collective family said those was information and stats and math and info to help improve my, you know, who I was, that they do. Right.
Yes. Yeah. So after the debriefing, I went out, sat on a bench. Again, I had the feeling that we were aboard a ship at that time. I could hear Melinda's voice, and Melinda was in that room, and she was going through the same debriefing. And then Melinda came out and sat on the bench as well. Now, I started to tell you that when we were on this bus, that we kept on seeing these different shapes, and then the shapes would kind of come together like a puzzle piece. And, you know, I watched them for a while, and I didn't realize that was also part of an experiment. And, you know, there was some place that we were taken, and we were told to find, you know, the shape that matched. And of course, we were shown those on the bus coming over. So if you were paying attention, it was a pretty easy thing. And I remember, because Melinda and I were still conscious and we were talking about it. So, you know, for the both of us, it was like, you know, it kind of reminded me of that game Tangrams, where, you know, they give you a shape match, and then you have all these other shapes that you got to put together to make that shape. And so it was sort of like that. And then back to the bench, and this other ET, it was a gray ET that came over and what had a tray.
Was he a light gray, blue gray, dark gray? Because I saw little 4 foot ones. What size and color were you?
Yeah, they were about 4 foot, 3.5 to 4 foot, I would say. Short. We were sitting, so we were sitting on this bench, and they were, you know, eye level, and you know, just the typical gray that you know you always see photos of, and I mean drawings of, and with the big eyes and the ridges on the head, and he had a little tray. And the tray had the Dixie cups with the pink, thick substance. And, you know, I picked it up and just gulped it down. Melinda said, yeah, I'm going to pass this time.
Oh, and so she didn't. Interesting.
Well, she resisted. Let's just say she resisted. And the original woman that brought us in with the red hair and ET hybrid came over and said, well, you can either take it or we can shoot it into your neck, you know, but you're not getting out of here without it. And so Melinda goes, okay, well, and she'd take a little sip. She goes, it's better if you just, you know, do like Jocelyn and just down the whole thing, down the hatch. So she looked at me and I looked at her and I went like that, you know, to show her that I was already starting to feel the effects of it. And Melinda laughed and laughed, and then she took it. And then the next day, here's another thing. I have this deal with the ETs that they can take me. I don't care. I mean, this is, it's happened through my life. They can take me, but they must give me something tangible, leave me with something that proves that they've taken me, so that I know that I'm not crazy or it's not just a dream. But
I've just started doing that, and they're doing it now, but I didn't think of asking that my whole life because I didn't start talking about this really to anybody.
Yeah. Well, this started, you know, when I was about eight.
Yeah, and now they're showing me pictures of some of the, you know, more things, but I'm now asking.
Oh, I've got a whole box of rocks and crystals and, you know, leaves and pine cones and stuff that I have found after being taken. This time, they left a crop circle made of those colored leaves. And
where was the crop circle at your near your house?
Outside my bedroom door.
How big was it? What shape was it? That's so cool.
It wasn't very big. The interesting thing is, it's like toward the side of my house, and this was where I used the dog run. And there's mostly just gravel out there, you know, kind of red rock, little pebbles. And I have a couple of peach trees out there. And then the neighbor had a big cottonwood tree. So there was lots of these very colorful leaves that were, you know, out there, kind of blown up against the fence. And in the morning, it looked like they were braided. They were so beautifully braided in a circle that was probably 8-9 feet in diameter. And in the middle, there was they're called orange globe, but it was a weed, you know, a wild flower that had been bent. And it looked like, you know, something that you would have as a centerpiece of your table. It was, you know, just done up beautifully with this braided leaves all around it. And this is the dog run. There were lots of dog droppings out there. There wasn't a single one. It was completely clean. And I said it was worth it just for that.
How long did that last? I mean, is that still a problematic area, or is that now?
Well, you know, the next morning, Melinda came over, and you know, it's really early in the morning, and we started talking. I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want anybody to be frightened or scared, but I knew, even though I didn't remember in all this much detail, I didn't remember until after I had been regressed by Yvonne Smith, because, you know, everything that had happened that I just told you. But I knew that something was up. First of all, when I got up in the morning, my walk-in closet looked like somebody, it had some sort of explosion.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit. So
yeah, I lost you for a minute.
Yeah.
Again, I've got full bars.
That's okay. Let's just keep going. Let's just keep going and maybe let's go, you know, till we can't go anymore.
So, I told you that in the morning when I woke up, I looked at I was getting dressed and I looked at my closet, and it just looked like there was an explosion. All the things were taken out of the dirty clothes hamper in there, and clothes were taken off the hammer and the hangers, and they were thrown about. And I thought, I must have been looking for something, you know. And of course, I was looking for sweats to put on. And the next day, my dog was just really clingy. And this dog loved Melinda. And when Melinda came over in the morning, my dog Emily went over and put her paws up on Melinda's shoulders and was going, woo. And I was thinking, God, she never does that.
She's having
this conversation with Melinda. It's like, what happened to you last night, kind of thing. But she was being extra clingy. Whenever I stood too long, she would come over and literally sit on my feet. But I was making coffee and, you know, getting breakfast, putting together. And Melinda said, you know, I think they're I think I had a UFO sighting last night, and then I could smell the cigarette smoke. So I knew that Bonnie was up. The first thing she did was walk outside and light up her cigarette. And I said, "Well, tell Bonnie to come over." And Bonnie came over, and she goes, "We had a big UFO sighting last night." She said, "The whole room lit up, and I looked through the mini blinds, and it was just lit up clear as day. And I looked up there, and there was a egg-shaped craft." And I went,
An
"Oh,
egg shaped like arrival kind of shape.
yeah,
Yeah, that's fine.
like a like an egg that's only big." And she said, "Yeah, I think something happened." And Melinda said under her breath, "Yeah, I think we were taken." And at that moment, my husband said, "Honey, why don't you come here and look out the window?" And I went to the bedroom, and I looked out the window, and I saw
Crop circle.
the crop circle.
Wow.
And
How damn
so
long did that
Melinda and
last?
I
Wow.
ran out there, and Melinda is a UFO researcher, and so she pulled up the centerpiece. Well, first she took lots of photos, she did measurements, and she said that she wanted to come back later, with something that would scan the ground for
Electro.
frequencies and but she had taken soil samples and had taken the centerpiece, which was interesting that somewhere along the line she said that they disappeared. Like she had them, and that she was moving from Orange County, California, to Sedona, and someplace in the move, all that stuff got misplaced. But we do still have the photographs of it. And so, had all of that. And again, we were talking about it, and I said, "You know what? Next month is UFO Congress, and I know that Yvonne Smith is going to be there. Let's not sully each other's stories of what we think will happen. We'll just go and get regressed." And so Yvonne Smith did regress Bonnie and I and Melinda, and we all told the same story. So
You
we
validated
know that
it. It
it
was,
was it, it yeah.
but that's
And
unbelievable that you got to go with two friends and have that experience together. I mean, I went up on the craft the first time from 72 was a couple of days ago, and I went at 5, and not until the last 4 months that I've been talking to my father, who passed 8 years ago, because he was involved in the government and the military and stuff for his whole life with his father's big company and his company. And I've only learned about this, I mean, through him, like in the last few months. So I've gone through my whole life feeling completely crazy because he was told to keep his trap shut because he was working with all those, the Navy and the blah. And if I had had that experience with other, if he had been able to tell me that, or my mom would have shared to me, because I'm sure he told her, but they weren't allowed to talk about it. But to have that validation, and I had a regression with Barbara Lamb and a couple other people. I knew you can't make that up. I mean, but for you to be able to have the validation with close friends at the same time is just really amazing, right? And then to be able to, and how long ago was that? When did that happen? When did you get taken with your friend?
That was in November of 2009, I believe.
2009. Okay.
Yeah, and
And have you gone back
other.
up a lot since then? Because I've been going ever since. Do you continue to go up and do things?
Not as often as I did. I mean, to me, it comes in waves. And for a while, like when I was a kid, my mom used to take me out to George Van Tassel's spaceship convention. And
I've seen pictures of that. I can't believe next to the mountain with all the, I mean, that looked unbelievable. What was that? How old were you then? I don't remember when that was. Was that the 50s or 60s?
Yeah, that was in the 50s. Probably, you know, I went out in the late 50s. I know that she went out there a couple of times before I was born, or while she was pregnant with me. And that would have been 1953, 54. But, you know, later, let's say, you know, because it wasn't like every year, like they do conferences that now. George Van Tassel had a radio program when he would make these announcements that they were going to show up, then he would have his spaceship.
Right. I've heard about it.
Just thousands of people, bigger than any of the conferences I've ever been.
And when did that end? I mean, did that end when, I mean?
Well, George Van Tassel was discredited by a New York lawyer. And back then there was no such thing as Photoshop. But George Van Tassel would describe what the craft looked like. And this guy that was a lawyer was also working with military, probably the CIA, and somehow had doctored or maybe even gotten some photographs of the craft that George Van Tassel was seeing. And one time during one of these spaceship conventions in the early 60s, the lawyers made an appointment to see George Van Tassel, and he showed them these photographs. And George Van Tassel went, "Oh my God, how did you get these photographs? This is, you know, exactly what I'm seeing. And I've never been able to, you know, they've never allowed a photograph. This is just great." And the lawyer said, "So you will authenticate it, that these are real photographs." And he said, "Of course, you know, this is amazing. And you know, can I get a copy?" And this is, you know, he was just going on and on. And then after George Van Tassel authenticated him, talked about him on his radio show, the lawyer came out and went, "Nanner, nanner, nanner, I was lying. Those are fake." And, you know, some Hollywood, just some, and it completely debunked him. And there were other things, you know, even about Frank Kritzer with the, you know, who had lived underneath the, originally made the home underneath Giant Rock. And that those information were not true, but they were being widely circulated that Frank Kritzer was a Nazi spy. And,
exactly. Same old.
So George Van Tassel said, "Fine, I'm not going to do any more spaceship conventions." But the contact continued. And the project of the Integratron continued, and it was Howard Hughes that was the money man behind the Integratron, and you know, in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, that Howard Hughes gave George Van Tassel $350,000 to build the Integratron, which was a kind of a like a time machine of sorts. But it also was a, kind of a cross between a med bed and a time machine, where they would walk in one door and the top of the Integratron had a track in it that would spin, and it would create this Tesla type energy that affected the body, so that if you walk in one door and walked out you know, walk through kind of a maze-like thing and walked out the back door, you would be completely healed. All of your DNA would be cleaned and charged, be like you were a brand new baby. And, you know, the any effects of aging, any disease was completely taken away from me. And, you know, the story goes that George Van Tassel was working on this, and he was about 85% done with it. And he, at this time, he had moved a mobile home onto the property there in Landers, California, on Bellevue Road. And he and his wife lived there while he constructed the Integratron, which, by the way,
so that was real. I would have loved, wouldn't you love to have seen that? I've got to look that up again. That is just so cool.
I actually saw it when it was being built. I remember seeing the skeleton of, you know, of the dome, and, you know, and my mom talking. I was a surly teenager at that point. I'd rather sit in the car and listen to rock and roll than go over and talk to George Van Tassel. But at some point, my mom was taking so long, so I got out and I was able to go over to the Integratron and, you know, hear some of the explanation of it from George Van Tassel. You know, the whole thing, George was testing of the Men in Black showed up, and, you know, his wife looked out and said, you know, something was happening. Something happening, and she went out there, and he was in full cardiac arrest. And by the ambulance out there to the Integratron, George Van Tassel had passed from a sudden heart attack. So that was basically the end of it. But it was
I don't think they want us to talk about this anymore. I think maybe we better end this session and maybe we'll do another one because before we get completely shut down here. Yeah, wow, we tried doing this the other day and it didn't work. So maybe we should do it while we're ahead because we've gotten this great hour.
I really enjoyed sharing. I'm glad the experiences that I had. And again, it was nice of you to let me come on out to Sedona all the time looking for answers to their questions. And I want them to know that Melinda Leslie does still do her.
Oops. Oh, we better.
I don't know why.
We better get off now because it's doing it again. But anyway, I'm so bummed because I was in Sedona a few times in the last 6 months and I was supposed to be coming this coming weekend and then I'm not coming because I can't because I'm going to another conference here. But anyway, you are just wonderful. I'd love to have you come back on and just talk more about it. You're just a wealth of information. It's so fascinating. I love that era. My dad knew Eisenhower and was, you know, with Wernher von Braun at 1951 at Area 51 for one whole day. And he's went back five or six more times and talks about what it was like going down those dark, you know, all those many stairs and saying, keep your trap shut. And just the fascination of seeing a few ETs and some of the another crash that happened in 1956 that people hadn't really heard about and seeing a few alien black up alive and one. Pat don't have passed. But anyway, thank you, Jocelyn, for all this is incredible.
Thank
and
you.
This is crazy too. I forgot that when I was, I used to have I had rugs that I made in India and Hong Kong and I had them all over the country. And I was down in LA one time at the Blue Whale and I was sitting outside sketching and a guy came up, was sitting next to me having coffee and I was waiting for somebody, Jodi Couquier, who was head of, I think she was senior vice president of Paramount at the time. Or Universal, I can't remember which one. And he said, what are you drawing? I like your drawings. And I said, well, I'm an artist and a designer and stuff. And he said, you know, I'm about to start a 50th anniversary for Walt Disney and all the Disney characters. Would you ever be interested in flying back down here when you're down here next month? And he was head of merchandising then at the time. So I spent about 3 months doing Woody Woodpecker, Donald Duck, sheets, bedding, towels, wow, furniture. I mean, oh my God. And then after about a year of coming up with, and I was working at NASA at the time, I had 10 students. I was teaching at the Academy Art College, and I had a bunch of interns with me, and I was had other paid designers there with me, but I was Mike Mary Edwards design. And that was really cool to be able to work on. I dated a guy named Tommy that was at one of the Mouseketeers when I was at college in Boston. So I walked in, I saw his Mouseketeer hat, and I said, were you a Mouseketeer? Anyway, so I mean, there was always sort of a little history of, and fascination, of course, of all of us, of Walt Disney. I worked on a house in, I'm an interior designer too, and worked on a Disney house in Lake Tahoe, and a friend's house was right next door. It was called Pink Lady, designed by that he had lived in. So it's just, who doesn't love, you know, Walt Disney and those stories? And then that property that you have and the stories that you have are just priceless. So anyway, we're going to stop the recording now before somebody beeps us off again. And thank you again. You're just a gem, big heart and smart and wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today, and look forward to the next time.
Thank you. Yes, right. I look forward to. Okay. Right. Talk to you
thank
later.
You. Take care, everybody.